Welcome to the Playbook for Modern Learning, where we are here to help you navigate what success means for your children in today's world. This podcast is brought to you by VIP Kid and Fortis Education, leaders in innovative learning solutions designed to support today's students in a rapidly changing world.
I'm Dr. Neil Hopkin. I'm Director of Education for Fortis Education in Dubai.
I'm Kristen Fawaz, and I am the Director for VIP Publishing with VIP Kid and VIP Teacher.
Kristen, I want to thank you for joining us here on this podcast today, because we're talking about what I would think of as one of the most important topics in education, which is, should schools be responsible for teaching and supporting the children's language development in entirety, or do parents have a job as well? And of course, you might ask it the other way around. Is it really the school's job to teach language, or is it really the parents' job to teach language? Where do you stand on this, Kristen? And help me out as a school leader. You know, give me a ray of hope, please, if you can.
Well, Dr. Hopkin, that's a great question. And I think there is really a delicate balance here. Of course, we know we place a lot of responsibility in the hands of our educators, but parents are the first teacher for children, and they continue to be a teacher that should walk hand in hand with educators that they've entrusted their children to. So as an educator of over 20 years and in the ed tech sector for almost 30, or ed tech slash education sector for almost 30 years, and as a parent, I think there really is a very delicate balance here, and I'm eager to explore that in today's episode.
That's brilliant. I'm particularly interested in what happens at home, because the truth is, of course, that and you're quite right, that children spend most of their time at home rather than at school. Of course, we don't think that's the case, but by the time you add up all the school holidays and weekends and so on, actually, children spend more time with their families than they do at school. And so in many respects, we might say that the home is the place where the learning takes place. But my experience is, I'm here in Dubai, and I work with a group of schools here with Fortis Education. And what I tend to find is that actually we have over 90 different nationalities of children in our school, many different languages that are spoken. And really, parents have traveled from around the world to be in Dubai. It offers many wonderful experiences for families. And so it's a very attractive global hub to be in. But of course, that means that they're a long way from home. And so they rely on schools to provide many things, a community, a place of belonging, as well as a reassurance that the learning that the child is doing is relevant and is impactful and is at least as good as they would have got at home. So in many respects, parents are looking to the school to help them support and manage the learning that takes place at home. Is that possible even, do you think?
I think that it's a big responsibility, and you're right. It is an expectation that parents have, because teachers, we would presume and assume in Dubai as well as the rest of the world, are highly trained. Teachers have, I want to say like 60% of the teachers in the U.S. have advanced degrees and, you know, master's, doctorates, et cetera. And I'm assuming that that is probably the same. I'm eager to hear what the experience is in Dubai. With teachers having had more time to study pedagogy, to understand a little bit more about how children learn, to understand metacognition, to have instructional practices to support learners, I think that they have a huge responsibility to parents to be able to come in hand and partner with them. Parents lay the love of their children. They want the best for their children. I think that is just a part of the human condition.
Yes.
We all want our children to succeed. And based on culture or our experience or perhaps our own education level, we may or may not know how to help them get to that point. So if we can lean on teachers who love our children as well and want the best for our children as well, there is a huge opportunity to be partners. And I think that it is possible, but it takes some work. And it truly is, like I mentioned before, a delicate balance. We often see, at least in my experience, as both a parent and as a teacher, I've seen extremes both ways. Parents that don't know what to do and therefore aren't involved or are over-involved.
Yes.
As a parent wanting to be more involved or not wanting to embarrass my child. I mean, there's a fine line there. But to your point, yes, I think that it is possible for teachers to be able to support what the parents are doing. And I think that it's important that parents and teachers work together. What are your experiences?
I couldn't agree more, Kristen. I think of experiences that I had when I was leading a school in Shanghai. And we would see our Korean students arrive at school in the morning. They already, Shanghai is an enormous city, so its population is greater than the total of the 10 most populous cities in the U.S. combined.
That's incredible.
Huge.
And such a booming growth even since the 90s.
Incredible. And so you would see students that had perhaps already spent an hour or longer, sometimes, you know, even 2 hours if the traffic was bad, trying to make their way into school. And we would particularly see, we noticed that our Korean students that were coming into school off the bus already asleep. And obviously that's not a brilliant start to the day. And so we had lots of tracking systems to see when they were doing their home learning, what time of the evening they were doing their home learning. And we discovered that most of the Korean students were doing their home learning between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. Why are they doing their homework so late? We just couldn't make sense of it. But of course, what was happening was that the many Korean parents were very anxious to make sure that their children kept abreast with Korean teaching pedagogies and methodologies and various different aspects of the curriculum. And so after they finished school, they would then go to Korean school in the evening. And so that would start at 7 p.m. till about 10 p.m. And they would then go home and start their homework that we'd given them to do their home learning. And I think around your very carefully and sensitively articulated description of that relationship between parents and the school, which is, we all know, absolutely vital. But the truth is that actually there are many different community understandings of what it means to be in a great and mutually supportive relationship with school. There are competing agendas at play for many families, and perhaps the school isn't always cognizant of that. You mentioned earlier that you were thinking about, you put it very delicately, beautifully, that parents that were very keen to be very involved and very enthusiastic in their involvement in their child's education. And of course, we all want to be engaged for sure and involved to an extent. But you're right that there's a balance, isn't there? We're trying to find somewhere in the middle that is just right for the children. And sometimes we can see that families get exuberant in their enthusiasm for a child to pursue a particular rate of progress, perhaps, or to reach a certain level of attainment in their ability. But with language learning, and for children that are acquiring another language, in this case, the English language, and maybe they've come from a space where that's not spoken at home, and so the school is their primary source of language acquisition, that's a lot of pressure, isn't it? And what's your sense of how we can help parents to become, I mean, to be fair to the parents, there's a reason that they want their child to acquire the language. You know, they see it as a lingua franca, or it's a common language that can be shared across disparate communities that have nothing to do with the English language, but actually it's the only shared language that those communities have. So there's obviously a purpose to having that language, but what sort of approaches have you experienced, or do you find in terms of being involved with helping children acquire English as a language, to help parents understand how to position their enthusiasm and support so that it doesn't become counterproductive?
Absolutely. Well, that's a great question. What we've seen with public education is ensuring that the school is being culturally responsive to the students and their families, to have an open dialogue with families about their expectation for their child. What do they want their child to accomplish? What are their goals? What are their dreams? What are their hopes? If the communication aspect is a huge important piece of developing the child across their learning journey, which we know that it is, we as a school need to be able to step in and support and help the children and help the families get to the point where they feel involved in the child's learning, they feel involved in the school, they're able to participate to their level of ability, and we can provide those opportunities for them to be as involved as they want to be or need to be. That is at the I'm speaking right now specifically to families that may not necessarily have the bandwidth to be as hyper-involved as other families. Some families, the ones that I hear you referencing and having a lot of experience with, are very keen to have their children pushed even further, to have every opportunity available, and they are wanting to encourage their child to be involved in studies around the clock. And while as educators, we do want children to have exposure to a variety of learning opportunities, we also recognize the need for balance. And as you're talking about how do we communicate that and work with parents on that, it's a little tricky because we do have to understand the culture. We do have to understand where the parent is coming from. Communicating that we have care for the child as well and helping them understand as educators what our methods are, what our reasons are, why we're doing the things that we're doing, what opportunities will lead their child to learn more within the classroom. We just need to keep the door of communication open.
I think that's very well put, Kristen. And I think in many respects, we have to be understanding of parents' dilemma, don't we? I'm English. We invented the language. And the problem.
And you do it. You speak so beautifully. Oh, if only I could speak as well as you, Dr. Hopkins.
If only you could hear my wife, Victoria, who does sound like the Queen. Whereas I very definitely do not. But the reality is that my children, one was born in Shanghai, another was born in Dubai, another was born in the UK. So they come from very different contexts. They're all British. But the truth of the matter is that we have a great appetite for learning languages of the countries that we've lived in. And so my children have learned Arabic and they've learned Mandarin Chinese. I haven't. You know, I'm the old dog that can't learn the new trick. And so now, of course, my children can happily have a conversation with their mother. And I have no idea what's being said, which, of course, is a great advantage for them.
But of course.
On the odd occasions when I do want to engage with them in the language that they're learning, in this case, Chinese or Arabic, I'm very conscious that my pronunciation might be wrong, that I'm trying very hard to provide an environment where they hear an exchange between myself and my wife, and we're role modeling how language is used so that they can learn from that and pick that up and get extra context. But actually, what I'm showcasing for them might be awful Chinese or awful Arabic. And I think my experience leading schools has been that many parents are very worried about that around English. And I think a lot of the drive to crack the whip with the children at home in their home learning is actually to do with the parent being very aware that if they read a book with their child, they think, I'm probably mispronouncing half of these words. And I don't want my child to pick up. Exactly. They're trying, yes. But they're worried that actually the role model they're giving for their child is the wrong one. So therefore, it's better to push their child into the home learning that the school has given or third party provider is offering. What do you think about that? Is there a place for parents to be calm about their mispronunciations or their contextual misunderstanding of what's being said? Because it's okay because they're just encountering language. Or actually, no, are they right to have that fear and say, no, it's if you want your child to learn English, you better leave that to the teaching of people who teach English.
I think that the parents' apprehension is absolutely fair. We want to model the correct English pronunciation for our children. But at the same time, even if your pronunciation isn't accurate, you're modeling a growth mindset of trying and learning and taking a chance. There's something huge to be said about risk taking and stepping into the unknown. That provides a great model for children as they are learning multiple languages or they're learning anything. When they encounter any adversity in life, when they aren't as perfect as they want to be, a parent making a mistake in front of a child and saying, wow, it's okay for me to make a mistake. That is a wonderful model for a child to see.
Love that, Kristen. I think that's brilliant. And I don't really think I'd ever really thought of it in that way before. So thank you for sharing that. But it does make me think about the kind of advice that I've given to early teachers in the first part of their career, when I've been reflecting on their experiences. I remember when I was a trainee teacher about 3,000 years ago. I think Tyrannosaurus Rex was still in my class, and I can remember as I was part of my course, I was visiting various schools in the locality around the university where I was training, and some of the teachers were okay. And, yes. And some of the teachers were not okay at all. And very occasionally you were lucky and you stumbled across a teacher who was brilliant, or you heard of someone who'd stumbled across a teacher who was brilliant. And I often find when I've been speaking over the years to trainee teachers that they have often had perhaps not the kind of role modeling experience that they want. And of course, if you're trying to learn a skill from someone who isn't brilliant at that particular skill, there are still things you can learn, aren't there? You can still say, well, when I'm a teacher, I won't do that. And you know, when I get this job, I'm definitely not going to take that kind of approach. And so there are positivities, that sort of growth mindset that you can rescue from situations that aren't great. But actually, it's so much better if you're trying to be a brilliant footballer or ballet dancer or heart surgeon to have role models that are inspirational and that you aspire to become like them. And I wonder really whether parents find themselves in that position. And there probably is a sense in which, and I, as I say, I've never thought of it before, where as a parent, you are role modeling a growth mindset. Look, do you know what? I'm trying. And yes. You as my child, you're reading as much about my attitude as you are about the language. And so that's great. But there must be a point at which I would have thought, but I look forward to your wisdom on this. There must be a point at which so many well-intentioned role modeling, but actually not particularly accurate role models of language, they must reach a particular point at which you say, I need to switch to somebody who really understands this, and I need some other program other than my mother or father that can't actually speak this particularly well. Where's that tipping point? Where's the point at which you say, attitude is great, but now we need to actually hear the correct models?
We need to bring somebody in who can help and support us. Sometimes, you know, I've seen this in the online classroom where parents mean so well and they're sitting next to their child and they are offering support and they're encouraging their child, but they're also not allowing the teacher the opportunity to model the correct pronunciation. And that is detrimental to the child's progress as they're going between the teacher and the parent. Who do I listen to? Very stressful situation. So the parent wants to help the child, but maybe needs to release the reins just a little bit and allow the expert to come in and do the job that they are trained so well to do and just kind of partner with the parent a little more. I can speak to this as a parent myself. I've got two children. One's a college graduate, starting off in the real world with her big girl job. And my son is as a university student. And I was having a conversation with them recently about their childhood and what they remember. And my daughter told me, she said, you know, you were very involved because, you know, I was a teacher at their school at the time. And of course, you know, I am pushing them to succeed. And she had mentioned to me, she's like, you know, there were times when I was very stressed about you being so involved and you following my progress and asking me how I was doing. But simultaneously, I liked having somebody that I could come to. And I had, when I didn't feel comfortable being maybe shy in front of my peers or asking my teachers for support. I knew I could go to my parents and they would advocate. They would talk to me. They would work through things. And she had mentioned specifically a time that she was struggling with her math content. And we were able to seek outside help because there was a point where, my goodness, I haven't done this type of math in years. How on earth am I going to help my child excel at this higher level math when, you know, I'm sure if I had chosen a different profession, I'd be using it daily, but I do not use it daily. And I certainly don't want to set her on the wrong path. So we were able to get outside support. And she said, Mom, I hated going to these math classes at 8 p.m. at night when all my friends were out doing other things, but it really set me on the path to success. So she was expressing appreciation to that. And I think there is a balance.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. I mean, a couple of thoughts occurred to me as you were speaking there. You know, one of which is, why is everybody's example of something they struggled with always maths? You know, nobody ever says, oh, chemistry, it was awful. No one ever says that.
Biology. You know?
Yeah, biology. Curses, biology. No, it's always maths. But I mean, there's something to that, isn't there? I've often felt, you know, I joke with parents when I say, if we're running sort of support, parental support classes for parents, I often joke around and say, people very proudly say, look, you know, I'm not surprised that my son John can't do maths. I couldn't do maths. My father couldn't do maths. We go back seven generations not being able to do maths. People, there's a certain level of pride at not being able to do maths.
Goodness.
In a way that around languages, we wouldn't ever say that. People want to grapple. But I was also thinking as you were describing that moment with your daughter, I was imagining what that must have been like for her when she was younger. What your close engagement looked like beyond the obvious, when it was down to a certain moment and perhaps someone else supporting, were you there? I can remember taking piano lessons when I was seven and my parents would sit in the room as I was having my piano lesson. I'm sure they were being supportive, but I didn't feel it that way.
No.
And sometimes when people have language lessons, perhaps online, maybe there are parents sat around while they're having that language lesson online. And maybe it's the case that the parents are also taking notes and they're trying to get some surreptitious language learning going for them, which is a great thing and great role modeling, of course. But actually, it does provide a certain atmosphere in which the child learns. What's your advice about how parents should be if a child is learning online? Should the parent be there? Should the parent be there but just reading a book and they're just there in the space of the child because maybe that's a good safeguarding online presence thing for a parent to do, but they're otherwise engaged reading their own stuff or doing something else themselves? Or should they be there listening to every word and making their own notes and perhaps then picking up on that with the child afterwards and saying, hey, do you not remember that your teacher said this and you should be doing that? What's your advice about what's the optimum way of a parent being engaged with online language learning?
You know, I'm going to come at it with this diplomatic response.
You are, Kristen. I know you are.
It truly does matter what type of personality your child has, what type of parenting style you have. You might have a child who is very active and very wiggly and likes to run around the room. In that case, sitting right next to them could be very beneficial. On the other hand, you might have a teenager who needs a little bit more independence, and you want to trust but verify. So maybe, you know, poking your head in the room every so often or sitting nearby and reading a book is helpful. You might have a child that appreciates having you come side by side with them and take notes and support them. But what I have found in my experience as both a parent and an educator, that too much involvement in that sense reduces the child's autonomy. And unfortunately, the child leans on the parent so much that they're not taking that step and pushing themselves to think about the language in a new way or to think about the new content in a new way. Somewhere in the middle of being right there, taking all the notes and feeding all the information back to the child and being absent would be the right place to be.
Do you think there's a role? You're making me think really, Kristen, about it because, I mean, in what you described, the parents are, in the scenarios you described, the parents were discerning. They were looking at their child and deciding, what kind of child have I got? and how should I be? It's a little bit like if you're running schools and, you know, maybe there's some issue that you want to raise and you invite parents in. The only parents that come are not the ones you needed to speak to. It was all those parents don't come. And so to a certain extent, the sort of the discernment approach for, you know, how should I be around my child? I'm going to start by looking, what kind of child have I got? The parents that do that, of course, are the ones that are probably going to get it right. And the real issue is those parents that aren't asking themselves, what kind of learner is my child? What sort of emotional state is my child in? How do I create that environment? So do you think there's a place within English language learning to run workshops for parents, to have conversations with parents, to help them understand how to be discerning, or in even the importance of being discerning about your child as a learner? So although it's nothing explicitly to do with teaching language to a child, it is an important part of the child's context within which their English language learning will be optimal if the parent can get it right and understand that they need to be self-aware to get it right. Is there a place for that? And how do you sell that to parents to say, look, before we even start teaching your child, I better teach you a little bit about how to create that environment. How do you get that across to parents, whether it's in an online forum or within a school setting? How do you get the need for that across to parents that actually, look, there's three fingers pointing back at you here rather than that finger pointing at your child saying, will you learn the language? How do you do that?
Well, that's the million-dollar question right there. Yeah. That's very tricky because, as you mentioned earlier, the parents that are involved are already coming to these meetings. They're already acting with a certain level of discernment.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is really find a way to connect. So going back to our previous portion of the conversation, finding a way to connect to the parents who are less involved, to invite them into the conversation, to show them the benefits of their child being involved in these extra activities, how they can be the best support, cheerleader, advocate for their child, walking them through some of the strategies that are being employed in the classroom so that they understand the approach and that they have the tools at home to reinforce at the level that they feel comfortable, providing a scaffolded approach to learning so that parents who do want to be involved know, okay, here are some resources I can pull from. Here are some audiobooks I can have available for my child so that they hear correct pronunciation. We want to pull these parents in. There is a place for it. There is a need for it. The question is, like you said, how to do it? What have you experienced in your career that's been successful?
Well, and that's a great question. The first thing that comes to my mind is an experience we had very recently. We have a very strong English language learning program here at St. Mark's School in Dubai. And we have a wonderful leader of ELL here called Hannah Casey, wonderful lady. She's a Canadian and super enthusiastic about English language acquisition. And very creative, real creative soul. And so she's very inspirational to her team of teachers and support assistants that work with our children that are acquiring the language. And it struck her that actually maybe I should reach out to the parents. And so she reached out to offer English language learning experiences for parents. And we do a lot around supporting parents, but now we're actually reaching out to you as an adult. And we thought maybe there'll be a level of interest. We were absolutely inundated with parents that wanted to do it. I mean, that's problematically wonderful. Inundated.
Oh, goodness.
What are we going to do?
We need more teachers.
Yes. What are we going to do? We have hundreds of parents who actually want to come to the school, want to come to St. Mark as a beacon of excellence around English language acquisition. But actually, this is a whole new endeavor that we're looking at. But what it raised to us was the desire, the appetite that there is, especially in international schools. We have over 90 different nationalities in our schools, so very diverse. And as we were saying, that when you move around the globe for work, as our families do, then that notion of diaspora becomes very important. You're away from home. And so the school becomes the community hub for you. That's where you get all of that nourishment that you would get from your locality, from living only a street away from your sister or brother that you've grown up with all your life and
you know,
extended family.
Now. Yes.
This is now
yes.
your family. This tiny little community, maybe of 10 or 12 or 50 people who come from your home country and eat the same foods that you do and
yes.
laugh at the same jokes that you do, that all those
right.
other nationalities don't find funny.
Right.
Or they don't like that food. So suddenly that becomes very important. And of course, what that means is that you're left in a position where actually the school becomes the source of much of your intellectual nourishment as well as your social nourishment. And I think we were surprised at the level of appetite for English language learning within the parents. Now, of course, we will tackle that problem and address that and meet the need, because we perceive that not only is it going to benefit the children, but it's going to benefit the parents. And mm-hmm. if it benefits the parents, then that's a good thing in and of its own. And actually, of course, it then goes on to benefit the children more. But I think the reality is that when I look at my experience over the last 30-odd years as a school leader, the truth is I've seen a level of anxiety that parents have because they want their child to do better than they did. And they have a certain level of English, maybe everyday English, but they want their child to be much closer to fluency. And I think supporting that and offering a means to support that through programs such as VIP Kid becomes something which is very valuable. It's something which offers a lifeline because it's quality assured language teaching from mother tongue speakers. And ultimately, I believe that's what parents really want, mother tongue speakers teaching their child. Now, you know, maybe that isn't necessarily a prerequisite. I don't imagine it is. You know, I was taught French at school by people that weren't French. So maybe it's not a prerequisite, but I think we think the gold standard will definitely be that. Is that what you think? Do you think that the gold standard of any language teaching has to be that it's taught by someone for whom it's their mother tongue?
Well, before I answer that, I want to address something you said just a moment ago about it's a dream for their child to do better than they did, to have a better command of the English language than they have. I mean, what a beautiful dream that we have for our children to do better than we have.
Yeah.
So by providing opportunities such as supplemental language classes or being involved in your child's education at a higher level or just being there to listen and support and model speaking and risk-taking and reading and all of the things that we are desperately wanting the parents of our students to do, that is a beautiful thing, and it's aspirational. So to answer your question in regards to whether or not a language needs to be taught by a teacher whose mother tongue is that language, not necessarily. However, you're right, it is the gold standard. And if you want to have a particular accent, or you want to have a particular cultural twist to the language, or truly understand language at a level that does play with culture, because we know there are certain ideas in cultures that exist because of words in the language. So in that sense, linguistically, there is a benefit, definitely, to having a native speaker. But is it a necessity for every family who may not be able to afford that level of class to their child? No, start with what you can do for your child. Mm. As long as we're starting, as long as we're trying, as long as we're opening doors for our children, that is the best that we can do. And every day as parents, when we reflect on the dreams that we have for our children and what we are able to do for them, we just get better and better as we learn, we improve.
Yes.
At least that's the approach that I've taken as a parent. I'm not perfect in what I'm doing, but I'm trying my best every day. And we just encourage our families to do the same thing. And we're here as educators to support that and help their child reach their dreams.
Kristen, I imagine you're an absolutely fantastic parent.
Well, I don't know. We try.
In reality, I look at my young children that are learning Mandarin Chinese, and they look at the little characters. And I hear my wife explaining how this little character works and what the imagery is and what the symbolism is contained within many of them. And there's a wonderful story to that, which, of course, she's learned from her Chinese teachers, and they've explained that to her. English is very interesting insofar as many countries speak English as their mother tongue. And so actually, I mean, there's this saying, isn't there, that the USA and the UK are two countries that are separated by a common language.
By common language, yes. You know,
I love that. And because it really embraces the notion of culture and how culture changes everything and, you know, it infects humor and discourse and so on. But because English is taught in many different places, you know, if we were just to say the US and Canada and Australia and New Zealand and the UK, we just took those places as examples of where English is spoken, then actually the cultural context of each of those versions of English is very different. For instance, I say whilst, and I don't think Americans ever say whilst, you know.
No.
So I instantly indicate my Englishness by the use of that word. But actually, there's a lot deeper culture that underpins that. What's your impression of how, around online language learning, about how much tutors are able to let children access a sort of a standard English as opposed to an American version or an English version or Australian version? Here in Dubai, the children learn modern standard Arabic. But actually, it's not a language that anybody particularly speaks, because each different country has its own version of Arabic, which is very different to this formal sort of Shakespearean kind of English that people will be looking at. And so what's your sense of how online provision of English is able to get to whatever a standard English might be, as opposed to a particular country's version of that cultural heritage of English?
I think it really comes down to how the curriculum is constructed, and is a very intentional design behind ensuring that parents are getting access to a standardized version of English. With VIP Kid, we have various tracks of curriculum based on what parents are looking for, whether they're looking for more of something that's Cambridge-based or something that's more American-based, Common Core standard-based. We want to be able to provide options and variety for parents, but at the same time, ensure that all of our classes approach English with correct grammar, pronunciation, etc. And as we notice children are coming into our classes, perhaps they are with an American teacher in an American style class. If the child is coming in with a British accent from having been taught that in their brick and mortar school, we encourage it. We understand we are trying to be culturally responsive to their learning, and we make sure that we show two different versions of the while versus the whilst, that we are enforcing what they've been learning before, and we're not telling them, oh, no, that's wrong, that's incorrect, because it isn't. It's just a different approach. And
yes,
we want to expose children to a variety of ways of saying the same things while encouraging their development in language.
I mean, that might be a lovely place to stop, really, Kristen, because you've talked there and you've used this phrase a few times, and I love it. It's one of my favorites, that we're culturally responsive. And I think that really emphasizes a lot of what you've been talking about today, which is for teachers to be looking over there at the child and understanding who they are and what they need and what their environment needs to feel and look like in order for them to succeed and to feel that success and to enjoy that success. But you've also talked about looking at the parents and their ability to also look at their child and see what do they need from me as a parent, and to do some reckoning around what are my ambitions for my child and what are my child's ambitions for themselves and what actually might be productive and useful. And I think that cultural responsiveness that you talk about is very much about understanding, yes, this is us as a teacher, and this is you as a parent, and this is you as a child, and we're all working to understand that culture so that we can enable you to embrace your home culture, retain that sense of your belonging in your journey, whilst at the same time acquiring this new skill to a point of fluency that enables you to exercise that skill set when you need to. I've really enjoyed talking with you, Kristen. You bring a great sense of enthusiasm and passion for your subject. And I think that's the key. When a child encounters someone with your qualities, you know, that radiant smile of yours and that warmth around language, it makes them feel comfortable. And if children can feel comfortable, they'll feel free to take the risk and they'll feel free to fail. You failed as that first attempt in learning, and they'll take those steps forward. And that wonderful role modeling that you talked about and the growth mindset that's there will be very important. So thank you for spending the time talking with me today. I feel enriched as a result of talking with you.
Oh, Dr. Hopkins, it's been such a pleasure. I have enjoyed this conversation immensely and hearing about your experiences. And you just bring so much talent and expertise to this conversation.
Well, that's what happens when you're 1,000 years old, Kristen. So there
stop,
we go. You
know?
Thanks very much. Take care.
A delightful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more information, please visit www.vipkid.com and www.fortiseducation.com.